The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
On this week's episode of Zach on Film, we're talking German films once again. People running through the streets. Joining me again for this episode is Rodrigo Lopez.
Hey, man.
Hey. And, of course, Steven Schleicher.
Hello.
Hey. You guys ready to talk some more German films?
Yeah, let's talk some German films.
So last week we talked Run, Lolo Run, which is a 1998 film.
Mm-hmm.
Featured a lot of running through Berlin. And I said, hey, there's this other film that people said was like kind of somehow inspired by Run, Lolo Run.
Okay.
A German girl running through the streets of Berlin again. And go figure, I didn't realize this until about 20 minutes before I came over. The director, whose name is Sebastian Schipper,
yeah,
is actually in Run, Lolo, Run.
Oh, really?
He said he was Mike in the movie, which I tried to find on like a million different articles trying to figure out who Mike was. I guess it's one of the characters they do the quick cuts of in the film, but I could never really confirm that. They just said Mike is in the movie. He's listed in IMDb as Mike. Could not figure out who it was. I don't remember anyone called Mike, but he's there. He's in it.
Interesting.
And now he's directing the movie we're talking about this week, which is Victoria. This movie was actually shot a while ago and made its debut at the Berlin Film Festival, and then it got picked up in Toronto and kind of made a lot of film festival routes to 2015. And actually, completely coincidentally, Victoria comes out on DVD and Blu-ray the day we're actually recording this.
Oh, cool. All
so right. What great timing we made.
Yeah. Hooray for us. Yes. Smart planning there, Zach.
Yeah, I totally planned it.
I'm mega sure on purpose.
So the big draw of Victoria, before we get into kind of what the story is that people are talking about it's one take. It's one it's one shot for 2 hours and 14 minutes, which I thought, pshaw, Birdman, everyone's like, it's like a one take film and there's cuts in there. And I watched this a couple months ago for the first time, and I watched it very intently until I got sucked into the movie, and I could never find any cuts. And then I watched it again. I could never find any cuts, and it is, in fact, a one-take movie.
There are no edits in this. Because watching carefully, too, and I was like, well, there could be one.
Yeah.
There could be one, and there could be one. I thought I saw, like, three different ones, but if they really did it in one take, because apparently that's how he sold it to the financiers. He's like, look, I guarantee that this will be one take, and if not, we'll do a bunch of jump cuts for it to make sure that you get your money's worth. So,
did you think there were cuts, Rodrigo?
I don't know. I couldn't tell if there were. I know that there were a few places where I was like, here you can place a cut and nobody would notice.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm willing to take it on faith if they said, nope, this whole thing was one shot, and at one point, you know, somebody missed their entrance and we had to drive all the way back to, you know, six blocks to start over, then I'll believe them. But yeah, so I didn't catch anything obvious, but there were a few times when, for example, the screen goes black because the camera goes like basically the biggest one that I saw was when they all get into the van and there's kind of, they look to the left and they go down to the floor of the car, and then they look over at what was the character's name? Sane. And I was like, you could have totally put a cut there. 100%. Nobody would have caught it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a couple. Going through it the second time, I thought maybe there was one or two, and I hadn't really read about it first. I just wanted to watch it again. And going back in theory, I read interviews with the director and cinematographer, all confirm it was this bank heist film is all done in one take on the third try they did it.
Yeah, it says here that they rehearsed for 10 days before shooting the film. This is from The Guardian. They rehearsed for 10 days before shooting the film in its entirety for the first time over the course of more than 2 hours, 22 locations, during the early hours of the morning. Following the first full attempt, they took a 10-day break before doing it all again. 2 days later, they shot Victoria for a third time, and the final take is the one they used for the film.
Yeah, and the director said during those 10 days of rehearsal, they would do it in 10-minute chunks. And they were filming the entire time so they could get their basis of, well, if the one take doesn't work, we'll do this jump cut thing. So they did all this. They do the first one. They said they filmed the entire thing. They got through it completely. But he said it wasn't great. They did the second one. He said he didn't really elaborate. He just said it was crazy and it wasn't great as well. And that's when he saw the jump cut version and said it was just garbage. And so they said they rallied in 48 hours and did this last take of the film, which is in its entirety what we watched this week.
There's another quote from The Guardian. It says, "The other two were worthless, the shippers. During the first take, everybody was good-boying it. Nobody wanted to F up. That's not entertainment. For the second take, I said, don't be afraid of chaos. Go all in. But the second one ended up being too chaotic. It was nothing. For the third and final attempt, Shipper said he had a certain amount of aggression. I was like, quote, what the F are you waiting for? Why are you holding back? Don't think of new scenes and new lines. Just be in the moment. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. Apparently, the script is only 12 pages long.
Yeah, there's no dialogue in the script. It was just like a treatment, and they just kind of had some inspiration and they just ran with it, which I think is probably my biggest complaint of the movie. The first, I don't know, 30, 45 minutes of the film is this girl, Victoria, who is in Berlin from Spain, and she's in a club and she's dancing and eventually meets these guys, and they're kind of just roaming through the streets of Berlin as she kind of learns about them and who they are. And that is like the first hour of it, I felt, is kind of boring to a point where it feels just like what is happening.
At the 41 minute mark, I was watching the movie, and then I right at the 41 minute mark I hit the pause button just to see how much time had elapsed, and I was like, holy crap, there's still another hour plus in this movie. And this feels like the first half of the movie feels like before sunrise, you know, where it's just them walking around what is it, Paris, getting to know each other and trying to find out about each other. And it's like, well, this is like a first date movie, which was nice because there was some interesting emotion and acting between the actors, but it was really dry. And if they could have trimmed 20 minutes off of that, I think it would have been a lot better.
Oh, well, that's one of the critiques I saw, is people saying, well, you do this one take and it's kind of raw and in the face, but you took 40 minutes to tell a thing that a traditionally shot and cut movie would have taken 20 minutes to do. Is that what you were feeling, Rodrigo?
No, absolutely. I was like, seeing as a whole, the last half of the movie makes it, or maybe the last third of the movie, kind of makes it all worth it in retrospect. But while I was going through it, I was so bored. I was, at first I was like, I was really worried, like this girl like walking around with these guys, and I was like, what is this movie going to be about? And then when it seemed like nobody was gonna, you know, do anything terrible at first, I was like, oh, okay, actually this is pretty boring. Like, especially, you know, it's like, now we're walking on the streets, now we're going to the roof, now we're going down to the cafe, now we're talking at the cafe. Okay, now things are getting going, but actually they don't get going for a while after things are getting going. There's a lot, a lot of time passes and very little happens at the beginning.
Yeah, that is, I mean, so it is this idea that is boring in the moment, and then I think about it, and it's very... The whole concept of it is intriguing to me, which keeps me in through the film until We get past a lot of the talking and the bank robbery starts, and the adrenaline, I feel like, really kicks up in the film.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because they're actually doing something. I mean, yeah. There's nothing wrong with the concept of the film, I don't think. I mean, there's a question I have for you in a little bit.
But sure.
There's nothing wrong with this concept of the girls at a club. She meets some strangers who may be ne'er-do-wells. They convince her to go with them. They go and smoke some stuff up on top of the rooftop. She's a stranger. She doesn't know anybody. So there's an attraction there. One of the guys is attracted to her. She has to go to work, which is literally across the street from where they're shooting or where they're standing. And he has a talk with her where we reveal more about her life and everything. Mm-hmm. Then we find out this guy's other best friend owes a gangster guy a favor. And then they go off and rob a bank.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a horrible premise. And a lot of it plays out right, but it just, this whole moment of getting to know you and these attempts of flirtation and trying to find out where the story is, especially when there is no story and a lot of it's ad-libbed, mm-hmm. Is frustrating for that first half.
Yeah.
And yep. I don't know if there's a fix for it, because there really isn't.
Well, no, especially when you're working with no dialogue. If there was a set dialogue and you were kind of working with a semi-rigid structure of a film, mm-hmm. and how everything's gonna be paced out. But when you're kind of just free-form and jazz in this film, and you're just kind of letting your actors wander in and out, it gets a little messy.
And then on top of that, that a fair chunk of the film happens in a language that is not the native language for either of the actors,
right.
Either of the central actors. It's kind of a problem. You know, there's in a scripted movie, you would maybe have some indication of that, and then you'd move on. But I mean, I think there are times when, like, they're both sitting there trying to come up with a word.
Yeah.
Like, she can't remember exactly what something is called, and he can't remember what something is called. And it's like, we just sit there where they're trying to, like, put something together, because neither one of them speaks the other's native language.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that is simultaneously frustrating, but amazing, because it is a film playing out in real time. So that would be a completely normal conversation between two people who just met, who speak different languages and are from two different countries.
Right. And that's why I can almost forgive how boring the first half of it is, because it is in one take. And yeah. I kind of forgot going in that this was just a one take movie. It was just like, hey, here's a movie we can talk about for next time. And it's got some buzz to it. And so I can kind of forgive that slowness to it, because it is, and that's why I kind of like the acting in, especially between the two leads, is they're getting to know one another. You can tell that there's an attraction there. They're doing things that guys and girls would do when they're meeting each other, at a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as always happens when you just jump into a car and go rob a bank. I mean, it seemed very natural. I mean, that's happened to everybody.
Yeah.
But I mean, it seemed to work. And I think that's why I can be a little bit more forgiving of that part, even though it's kind of messy, because it's, talk about your, cinema verite. Let's just, or the mise-en-scene. Let's just put everything there and shoot it like it's a documentary. It feels like we're watching this documentary.
Mm-hmm. It's really funny you bring the documentary thing up, because the cinematographer, whose name I might mess up, is Sturla Brunth Grovlin, who's a cinematographer on the film. And he said when he was talking to Shipper about doing the film, he was bringing a lot of his background in documentary filmmaking into it, because that's kind of what it is in a sort, a slightly more stylized, structured documentary.
Right.
But so the film, as we kind of mentioned, it ramps up into this play of Victoria has to join these three guys and rob a bank, and it just kind of goes off the rails from there, where they're avoiding the police, where they rob the bank, they celebrate in the club, they have to start avoiding the police, they get into a shootout, which is probably one of my favorite scenes of the film, just from the technical aspect of making sure everyone arrives at the location on time. Yeah.
Think about everything that has to happen, right? I mean, it's not like you have a bunch of actors just around the corner, because this really in order to do this in the time period. They're not driving clear across town. I mean, this takes place in like 4 or 5 blocks.
Probably, yeah.
But still, to coordinate all of that so that people can get from point A to point B was amazing, to get all that to happen at the right time.
Yeah.
And to keep everybody out of the way was, I also thought, amazing.
Are we going to see a time, Rodrigo?
No, I mean, I agree. That's what's really impressive about this movie, is not necessarily the interactions between the characters or even the heist itself, but all the choreography that has to happen, right? And, I mean, at times, that's partially what builds the tension, and at parts that's partially what kind of deflates the scenes accidentally. I remember sitting there thinking, I was like, what is happening when they first go rob the bank? It's like, why aren't they going in? And it's like, oh, because they have to wait for this lady to come in. And it's like, and they're waiting there for what feels like a really long time. And it's like, well, they send her out, she's walking down the street, and it just like takes her a while to get there, because she probably has to come from around the corner.
But it's also, but you know, it's also somewhat brilliant in that scene too, because if you're trying to keep everything low budget, and I don't remember what, I don't know what the budget was on this thing.
I haven't seen one yet.
But if you're trying to keep some things relatively low budget, even going in and trying to stage a bank robbery for a movie would have been a huge undertaking to actually have followed through with that entire thing. And so the brilliant thing is, we go into a garage where the mob boss guy is like, okay, here's the layout of the of the bank. Do your action so I can kind of see what you're doing, and then I'll tell you where you need to improve and do all these kinds of things, so that in the audience's mind, when they do go to the bank, we're out in the car for like 3 minutes, and in our, we don't hear any gunshots, there's nothing going on, we don't hear any alarms going off, we just see her sitting there and the car dies. But we can imagine in our heads what's going on in the bank because of what we've seen in this other zero budget location to get it done. So I thought that was really well done, and to make that work that way, to put it in our minds what's happening while Victoria is dealing with, oh my gosh, this stolen car has suddenly died, and how am I going to get it started?
Right.
Before before they come out. I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, that scene, because you're just, you mean you literally are sitting in there trying, watching Victoria trying to start a jacked van, which has died, waiting for them to run in. It reminded me of in Kill Bill Volume 2, when she's sitting in the bathroom after taking a pregnancy test, and you're just watching the second hand on the watch tick, because it's like in real time you're just watching this tick forever. And obviously that's kind of what the whole Victoria is, but that one scene specifically, we just have to watch, and you're just sitting there and you're sitting there and you're sitting there, and eventually someone comes in and the action kind of kicks back in. So, I mean, the stuff I read about this is obviously all about the one take. And so, does this prove that a one take is possible, that it should be done at all, and that it actually makes a good film? Or should it just be kept to like these weird art pieces? Because it's done, actually has been done before. It was, I think it's called the Russian
Ark.
Which I have not seen, haven't really read anything about besides the comparison to this.
I think it's hard to find, because I've tried to find it a couple times over the last, I think it came out like early 2000s, 2001, 2002, something like that. I've tried to find it a couple times. I'm sure it's out there on DVD somewhere, but I'm not one to go and buy something on DVD. Sure. It's always digital for me.
Yeah.
But I have yet to really be able to find that. And it is this one take history of Russia through the, what is it, the Russian Heritage Museum or something like that. But I can't even remember if even that was broken up in some way.
I'm not sure. The cinematographer Groveland was saying that was kind of their only thing they could look to for slight inspiration. But they said that the Russian Ark is a more stylized film, which was heavily structured and not like they were. So they were kind of in this water where they didn't really have anything to look to. Because any of the films you would kind of point to as this one big film would be Birdman, which isn't in Hitchcock's Rope, which wasn't as well.
Yeah, because those go about 10 minutes each.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way you can have a 2-hour film reel going on. So, do you even know what they shot this on? Because, again, for one take in 2 hours or however long the film, 138 minutes, 2 hours and 12 minutes or whatever that is, that's what did they shoot on?
They, so Groveland used his documentary background and ended up shooting on the Canon C300.
Oh, okay.
For this film, which at the time wasn't even the most up-to-date version of the camera. The C500 was out.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is going to be all very technical film talk for a second, and we'll try to explain it as we go through. So the C300 is one of Canon's cinema cameras. And mm-hmm. they just do video. It's not like one of their DSLRs.
Right.
They are a very nice camera. I've seen them very much.
Yeah.
They get used on films a lot. They're a very lightweight camera, which was he was very concerned about because this was all handheld. He didn't use a Steadicam for it. So that was a big factor. He shot on that because you can record dual SD cards, which they were doing. So they didn't have to flip cards out the whole time. He decided not to use a field recorder. Or an external recording device.
Oh, so they're just getting all the audio off of the...
That is a different aspect.
Oh, okay.
So, I'm sorry. He didn't record the video. He recorded straight to the SD cards and didn't use, like, an external recording device.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Sure. Okay.
And then he had an extra handle on top added so he could control the camera with one hand and leave one hand free to move out inside, outside car up ladders and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Lens wise, in the article that I found on, because Canon did an interview with him, since he used their camera and it's such a cinematography heavy film, he kind of mentioned three different Canon lenses that he had used before in documentary films, and he never specifically mentioned which lens he used on this film, which leads me to believe he did not use a Canon lens.
You don't think so?
Nice.
Well, because they never specifically said which lens he actually used on the thing. He just said, I've used the 70 to 200 before on stuff. I've used a 24 to 70 f2.8 on some things. I like these types of lenses because they have a fluid iris and they don't stop, so it can make easy transitions in and out. But he never really specifically mentioned which lens.
No, I think looking at this image that I'm looking at, it looks like a Canon lens on there.
Yeah. He just never really said which one it was.
Well, it's definitely a wide angle lens.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have to, with this movie especially, with focus being super critical, I mean, you don't have shallow depth of field in this, which again, lends to that documentary feel a lot of times in this. So you would need a wide angle lens to get everything in, or else you're going to have some weird ass zooms. So it's got to be a prime.
Yeah. And that's in the lens he mentioned in the article were both zooms. And I don't remember a zoom ever occurring throughout the film.
Well,
maybe this is very subtle, but I don't remember us really changing the look of the image.
I would include this image of their camera rig in the show notes, but I'm getting an error that says, this image is protected by copyright. CPM kindly requests that you do not copy it.
Really?
Beep, beep.
Yeah, so you can go find this at cpm.canon-europe.com is where I'm looking at the rig right now. And it's very compact and lightweight. I've known a couple people that shoot on the C300. A lot of the people that I know, for example, a friend of ours, Jason Inman, who does DC's All Access, I believe he said that they shoot the C100 on set when they're doing all their stuff there. The Film Riot guys, I believe, have a C100. I was going to say Sam and Nico are using a Red camera. So, but yeah, the C100 is kind of the low end of this. The 500 is the super high end. This one's kind of mid-range. And with this rig, the follow focus, the body, the handle, all that other stuff, you're looking at about $8,000 for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lens itself is probably another $5,000 to $10,000.
Right. Which he mentioned in the article again, not specifically naming lenses, but he said he didn't want to use a Canon cinema lens because they were too heavy.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever held a prime lens, for example, one that doesn't zoom, they're automatically really heavy, and the cinema lenses are these huge monstrosities of lenses that have this super amazing glass in them, and they are they're super, super heavy. So having to run around Berlin for 2 hours with something on that is not something he wanted to do for this film.
Yeah, you're right. I'm actually reading this right now. It says he's leaning towards a PL cinema lens.
Yeah,
but he doesn't really specify.
Hmm.
But I bet he would have to be using. There's no way he's using the 70 to 200 in this.
No,
he's got to be using
that one
the 20
is
to
super
70
long.
Millimeter. Yeah, but I mean, just to get the shots,
yeah,
he's got to be at 24 millimeters at least.
Yeah,
most of the time in that show, in that movie.
Well, which lends itself well, because I was actually surprised that they weren't using a Steadicam throughout, because I thought there's a lot of movement in the piece. There is some shaking, but if you've ever used one, I mean, however much as they were moving, it wouldn't surprise me if there was a little movement in the thing. And of course, using the wide angle would reduce the type of shutter using or the movement in the image. Are you surprised, Rodrigo, that they weren't using some type of steadying device for the camera and that he was just running around with this all in his hand the whole time?
Oh, I am. I really expected that there would have been something. And I even thought about it as I was watching. I was like, man, I feel bad for the guy who's wearing some sort of like weird rig because it's, you know, keeping the camera steady. Mm-hmm. But that's pretty taxing after a while. So apparently I have to feel bad for the guy who's actually just doing all the stabilizing with his forearm.
Yeah.
He did say the one piece of equipment he used to steady the camera was in the car, where he attached an elastic bungee string to the ceiling, and there was a hook on the camera he placed on there, so he could kind of get some steadiness when they were driving around.
Yeah.
Which is maybe just a little bit of a break for him, considering they are in the car for a nice stretch of time during the middle portion of the film.
Yeah, they almost, because of the amount of movement and location changes that are going on, they wouldn't be able to use... there's no way that they'd be able to use a Movi or a... what's the DJI one? The gimbal ones.
Yeah,
they wouldn't be able to use those because that's holding that out away from your body for 2 hours would be impossible.
Oh, yeah, it would be insane.
So it's, and you can't put it on a Steadicam because of they're going into some very tight places.
Yeah.
So that's bulky there. And yeah, so they would have had to go on. It's really well done. Just from that aspect, from the technical aspect of it, I really, really dig on that. And it has to be light. And, you know, shooting on these two compact flash cards, 64 gigabyte cards, it's amazing how much can get on these things because, you know, when we shoot these Munchkinland episodes here, we're shooting 4K video.
Mm-hmm.
We're shooting them on 128 gigabyte of these micro SD cards because that's what the cameras will hold.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get like 3.5 hours on one little card. So if they're using two of those 64s, it's either automatically switching over or they're doing double backup on that so that they're recording simultaneously on both in case one of them fails. But man, the technology, how far we've come today. I remember when back in the day, Rodrigo, you'd have to put your VHS in and you could get 2 hours maximum if you were doing it. Or if you're on your 3/4 inch U-matic, you got 20 minutes on a load before you have to swap out your cassette.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the biggest reasons why the long take movie hasn't happened before is because the technology is kind of an issue. Even today, depending on what camera you're using and what basically what density you're recording in, you can actually run out of time. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you bring that up just because the technology allows it now, but that does bring up this question is, and I think it's something that Rodrigo was trying to get, or Zach was trying to get to a moment ago. Do we need movie shot in one take?
Well, yeah, I guess need and should is an interesting now that the
because
technology
does this movie,
is there.
Does this movie move beyond just a story to it's a gimmick that's going to get me some attention?
I don't know. And well, if that's the gimmick, it kind of sucked because it hasn't really got a whole lot of attention. It got some play within like some film nerd communities, but didn't really have any critical success.
Well, it was disqualified from the Academy Awards because there was too much English language in it. So,
which is
if it had not been disqualified for that, it probably might have. Although they probably would have gotten a little bit more snobbish in regards to the production side of it.
This wouldn't have won.
You don't think so?
No.
No, from foreign language film compared to the other one?
No, they were all over that Son of Saul movie.
Okay.
And it, like, it won a bunch of other stuff, too. It was going to win.
So go back to the question.
This film is... Part of me, when I started watching it again, I was like, I don't know if I want to watch the whole thing again. And then I start watching it, and I get completely sucked into this movie. And... I did fast forward from some parts just to save time so we could watch
on multiple
House of
viewings.
Cards.
Yeah.
On my second one. And but I just get so sucked in because you are just in this moment where it's not, you're not getting taken out of it with a cut, even though a cut's a good cut doesn't really take you out of the moment. It's still a sharp change in what you're seeing. Mm-hmm. And so you just get into it. I just couldn't release it. The director said it's a, what did he say? It's a, it's not, I don't remember what he said. Essentially, it was not, this movie can't manipulate you because you're not using the editing or much lighting really to manipulate how you're feeling about the overall story. But in some ways, the aspect of what they did is the manipulation, because I could not look away from this film when I watch it.
Well, and that's the thing is, this movie arrives in 2015. Obviously after a long time of movie making, and by now there's this lexicon of what everything means in a movie, and we people who watch movies understand that now implicitly. Even if you've never stopped to analyzing, you know how sharp cuts make you feel, what they're getting at, what they're doing, you know, your swish pan, your anything, right? Your rack focus, whatever you want. And so long takes build tension. One of the things that long takes do is they give you a feel for a space, and or they build tension, because at the end of a long take, something happens and then you cut, right? Mm-hmm. So watching this, you are following along with, I don't know, Touch of Evil, Boogie Nights, any movie that you've ever seen that has a super long take and then something dramatic happens at the end, except it goes on for... 2 hours, and then stuff happens, and you yourself are probably going to disconnect from that, because it is a long time to be paying attention without the movie ever giving you a break. So I think, interestingly, for this movie, when you're watching it, you'll probably take a break at normal times to take a break in the conversation. Like, there's a bunch of people sitting around talking, and like, you might stop listening to what they're saying. I did, because I was like, well, I'm not really interested in this. You know, like, look down on my phone or whatever, and I'm like, oh wait, I'm still watching a movie.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I on my second viewing, I was really interested in where they cut the dialogue and just throw in music, so you can't hear the people talking anymore. And so it's like they were trying to install these natural downtimes, in the film, where you could kind of recover, but you're still watching them move through scenes. And this one, the first one I think I remember, is when they're climbing from the up to the roof, and you kind of get this just interlude of music. It happens in the club a couple of times, where you're just music and you just watch them dance or do whatever, they take off all their clothes and dance. So it's I mean, it's very interesting the way they still try to put a normal flow into the movie by still letting it play out in one take.
And that is a good technique, and also you can just throw that in their faces when they're like, well, this movie is not trying to manipulate you, right? It's like, you cut out the dialogue and you put in music. Those are all deliberate choices, right? Obviously they're trying to get at something. That's one. And two, it's really smart, because who knows what happened during that. Like, those could very well be covering up audio mistakes, or something like that, where like you hear the camera guy like tripping over something, or somebody walks behind them or something like that, and there's like, you know, as they're walking behind them, because I don't know if we got, if we determine how exactly they did the audio, but if it's all coming from the camera, then, you know, you can just essentially, somebody walking too close to wherever the microphone is can be a problem.
So the audio was done a little more planned out than cinematography, which was all just kind of happening as they were filming. The audio, he said, was done with, they recorded audio off camera. All of the actors were wearing a mic pack, and then they had boom crews at different locations ready to go. So when they got to that place, then they could start boom miking different things. So they had that kind of planned out, which I thought was interesting. So it wasn't, in my mind, it was always just one guy with the boom just right there next to the camera, just running through. So that, in that way, you have to stick another boom guy in the van as you're driving away and stuff like that.
It's interesting, though, about the audio. This is from moviemaker.com. there was a scene where the actors messed up with the audio. For it says, quote, "For example, when Freddie was driving away from the bank, he had this crazy idea to yell back at Franz, 'Throw away your jacket.' But Franz's mic was sewn into that jacket, and he actually had a thermal shirt on that wasn't even part of his costume. So for the rest of the film, he wears that thermal that's supposed to be keeping him warm. But what he doesn't wear is GD microphone."
Oh.
So, you know, when we're when you talk about they're dancing in the club and they're stripping off all their clothes.
Yeah,
they're not really mic'd anymore. So maybe that's why you have to bring the music up a little louder so you're not hearing all of that.
You know, that's exactly like I was watching those and I was like, this is so smart because it, you know, it kind of gives you this feeling. It kind of gets you a little bit into her head and what she's feeling. But also, this is the perfect way to mask an audio mistake. And when you're kind of going, because when do you see them? You see that at a club? And you see it in the elevator. It's like, can you imagine what that elevator actually sounded like? That could have very well been it.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you guys a question. Go back to the story for just a moment about Victoria herself. Yeah, it's kind of easy to imagine that she's kind of likes this guy and she gets wrapped up in this thing. But what do we really know about Victoria? At the end of the movie,
she's from Spain.
At the end of the movie, when her just met 2 hours ago boyfriend is dying in a bed and he's like, "Hey, take the money and run." She's kind of like, "Yeah, okay, whatever." And just walks away with all the money.
Mm-hmm.
Like not a care in the world.
I didn't feel that.
Well, when I was watching, I was like, have they manipulated her or has she manipulated them?
Do you want to go ahead with that, Rodrigo?
She almost seems like, I don't know, because she's lost and doesn't have direction in her life, she's willing to let these things happen so she has some kind of an excitement. I mean, she's at a club at 4 o'clock in the morning, an hour or so before she has to go to work. She needs something in her life. And so she's allowing this to happen. She's not even, you know, when they're trying to say, "Oh no, you don't need to go with this. You don't have to be involved with this." She's like, "Yeah, okay, I'll do it. Whatever." Almost like she's wanting things to escalate.
Well, I mean, I can definitely see, this idea that, you know, there's kind of danger and excitement involved and she wants to go along with it because, you know, her life might be a little boring. But I mean, I was like, just painfully aware of how long some of these scenes were, and she has the longest, slobberiest, snottiest cry over this guy dying. I mean, like, it's just like fluids coming out of her. And I'm like, I think she felt it. It really, to me, I mean, you know, what's her name? Laia Costa does a great job. But, you know, I really felt that, you know, she gets caught up and she gets a few opportunities to kind of be smart about things, which she immediately throws away just like every other character in this movie. And, you know, at the end, I mean, she looks totally like shell-shocked as she's like wandering away. I would disagree based with your read, but I think it's not an unfair read.
No, I'm not saying that that's what happened. I was just like, that's kind of odd. Some of the oddities that are going on in here.
So the Victoria character is interesting because you're right. She is at a club right before she has to go to work. She explains in the cafe scene that she kind of has this passion for music, but she got kicked out of the conservatory. So now she's essentially just wandering aimlessly in a different country now and not sure what she wants to do with her life, which I think makes sense about why she want to get with these guys and just have some fun in the first place. But then there's also some things to consider. One, she's probably somewhat drunk, at least in the beginning of the film, from doing shots at the club. And then halfway in through the film, let's remember they all snort some type of drug.
Right, right.
And so essentially for the rest of the movie, they're all super high and have adrenaline going through their entire, as characters entire body after doing these drugs, robbing a bank, getting in a shootout, fleeing from the police. So there's a lot of, to say that the character might be somewhat disingenuous, I think might be legit, but it also is like, this has been one hell of a night. You know, there's a lot of emotions, A lot of people have died. She presumably has never seen anyone die before. Now three people are dead that she's mm-hmm. just met.
Mm-hmm.
So on one level, I think it's like, oh, a character would never, you know, or a real person would never fall so hard for a person so quickly and then get the situation. Well, I know, but I think that's a critique you could probably make.
Oh, sure.
But then if you actually look at the whole picture, like, well, you know, not dealing with the most stable of people in that moment that this film is taking place in.
Yeah. I know that's not, it's not scripted, but maybe they could have rehearsed a couple of more times and kind of gotten some beats down of as some specific things that they needed to say and maybe tightened up some of those bits mm-hmm. to make the movie just a tad shorter.
Yeah.
Because then that may have made some more sense from the narrative instead of, hey, we're ad-libbing this. One person wants to go this direction. The other person wants to go this direction. And now mm-hmm. it's kind of messy.
Yeah. Well, that was the interesting thing with reading interviews with the director and cinematographer is how much of an emphasis they put on the fact that they knew the film was never going to be perfect when they started because mm-hmm. it was just not going to be possible the way they wanted to tell the story, and how much they emphasize to just be okay with slight imperfections to make the thing you want to make. You're just going to have to deal with mm-hmm. it sometimes.
Yeah, and that's...
No, go ahead.
That is a deal here, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, do you want to watch a movie that is done in one take? Then you're going to have to deal with the obnoxious parts
sure.
of
yeah.
watching a movie that's done in one take. It's like anything. It's like any sort of structural, let's say, trick, you know, or I mean, I don't want to say gimmick, but any sort of like structural device is going to have that. You know, in found footage movies, you're going to have shakiness. And you're going to have some highly contrived reasons as to why characters are holding cameras, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a one-take movie, you're going to have scenes that go on a little long, or maybe a lot long. in, you know, a movie that is, you know, purposefully in black and white, you're going to have moments where you're like, oh, we need to write this out of the script because nobody can tell what that is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like these two things, you can't tell them apart in black and white. You know, and like there's always going to be when you basically give yourself a restriction, which is what these movies are doing, you are going to have to deal with some of the artifacts on that. And, you know, it kind of to a certain degree is your like mettle as a filmmaker to show to get around those and see if you can be clever or not. And again, I think we do see some clever kind of covering some innovation with the way that they were doing the camera in the car mm-hmm. with the music being thrown on there. But also, you know, this is not, it's like by the time, Chronicle came around, found footage movies had been around for a long time.
Right, right.
So they were greatly benefiting. Was it Landis? Was that Max Landis?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was greatly benefiting from everything that come before with Victoria. All they could look at was just chunks of movies where they did this,
right.
And then, of course, didn't do it the whole way because it's insane, because it's really difficult.
Well, that's why I'm asking, would this movie have been better just using a traditional approach? Was this necessary to be a one-shot movie? Is there a benefit to having a one-shot movie beyond the gimmick aspect of it? Was there anything else added to this beyond the one long shot building tension? Was there anything else that benefited from this?
My almost problem with the question is that if you tell this story in a traditional format, it's like not the movie anymore
mm-hmm.
because then you're just a run of the mill, semi bank heist love story film, which this movie is, but it becomes something different because of the way they told it.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you're setting up and you're doing your takes and you're cutting the film back and forth and you're not crossing the 180 and you're doing all these standard traditional things, it is something that just falls amongst the rest of the film and it's not a thing worth talking about, essentially. The director said, you know, film is like a restaurant. A superhero movie is a hamburger and we all love hamburgers because they're so good. But if you have a hamburger all the time, you're going to get tired of it. So you have to mix it up. And this, I don't even know what, he doesn't even say what this movie is, but it's probably some like weird, fancy, like artisanal, like eggplant or something.
What this movie is some kind of sea creature cooked in its own shell, which means you have to do a lot of work to actually get to the meat, but you actually end up enjoying it a lot if you get there.
Yeah, so it's not, it's almost like this is something done another way. It's just not the thing. I mean,
You know, thematically, you have to think, you know, does this style match this movie? And it does. It does because, you know, it simultaneously matches it and creates it, right? So you're watching this movie basically from the point of view of this girl. We very rarely get very far away from her. Mm-hmm. You know, and it seems that the times that we do get away from Victoria, it's kind of a either to advance the story, like when she goes away and you see Sonny start to have some labored breathing because he's been shot, or because they just absolutely could not do something and they have to like move away from her so they can position themselves, right? Mm-hmm. But other than that, it gives you this movie where you're basically following her. It feels like you are a different a person who is following along with her, right?
And that's why I said
much more so than anything else.
Yeah.
This
would not have worked as a found footage movie.
Right. No. Exactly. And that's the thing, is like that is you have to ask yourself thematically, does this work? There are found footage movies out there that also don't work as found footage movies, right? Like
most of them.
Sure. I mean, there's kind of this choice that has to be made, and, you know, something that is so big as not having any cuts is going to drastically impact the storytelling, but also it's going to rely on that storytelling to get smoothed out. There's a reason why every other film looks different. There's a reason why every other film uses cuts and fades and all that stuff, is because it's easier and people already understand it. It's easier to tell that story. So you're going to have to kind of go, basically they kind of go hand in hand. The themes have to benefit from the single shot, and the single shot has to live in this story that's being created and could fail if the story doesn't merit it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's what I like, because they said the mistakes are golden and they make the film what it is.
Right.
But it also, some of the mistakes, I think, increased the drama in the film, because they said after they robbed the bank and they were driving away, the Victoria accidentally turned down a wrong road.
Mm-hmm.
And she was about ready to pull into right where everyone in the crew was setting up for the next location. And so the cinematographer like quickly turned his camera into one of the characters. And that's when they're trying to frantically back up. And so they can like get out of where they shouldn't even be, so they can continue this car scene.
Interesting.
So it's just, it's like not every movie should be one take.
No,
certainly no. Cause then it wouldn't be a thing that we would talk about anymore. And honestly, movies would be even more bloated and slow moving than they are sometimes now, even when people are taking a traditional approach to the filmmaking process.
So I said that I wasn't able to find Russian Ark digitally. It is currently available on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
It's got 1.5 stars.
Oh, geez.
1 hour, 39 minutes long. So if anybody wants to check out another movie that was done in a single take, a true single take, go check out Russian Ark.
Do you have any final thoughts on Victoria?
I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
But it also wasn't the greatest film I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I thought it was an interesting story that went into a place and resolved itself in the time that it was allowed, and that it was technically interesting. Is this something I want to see again? Maybe, only because I have questions about what does, you know, Victoria's intent, you know, that's the main reason I'd want to see it again. But I sitting here going 41 minutes of nothing, I don't think I can deal with that again.
Yeah.
So this is one of those worth checking out, but rent it or get it free. Don't pay for it.
Mm.
Kind of thing.
What about you, Rodrigo? Final thoughts?
It's interesting. It's one of these movies that I enjoyed in retrospect. While I was watching it, it was kind of a harrowing experience. But now that I'm on the other side of it, I think, yeah, that was pretty good. I would say definitely watch it, knowing that not much happens before that. And, you know, again, apparently, because there isn't that much, this medium is young. The single take film is still pretty young. So there's still a lot of room for improvement, for change. Honestly, there is already single take long form entertainment, and that's theater. So I don't see why they couldn't just do this as a play in a single location. Obviously not this story,
but
another story. I think the single take movie has a lot of places to go, and it could become a thing. Like, you see a new found footage movie coming up every once in a while. You could see a long take movie come up, you know, once a summer or once a winter.
Could you imagine like 12 Angry Men as one take?
12 Angry Men would be very interesting as a one take, depending on how they staged it. I mean, it could be very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, anything. Noises Off would be fantastic as a single take movie. Well, I guess they do have a kind of a time skip in the middle, but you know, the problem with two act plays is that it can't actually be a single take,
right?
Because time passes in the middle. But you could write something specifically to do it that way, something that, you know, takes place at a wedding or something, and all the family's already there, and you're just like kind of following people around as they're making preparations. Absolutely. You know, there's like, there are great farces, like actual theatrical farces, that are all done super fast entrances and exits, very dynamic, and they all happen while you're just staring straight ahead at everybody walking in and out and mistaking each other for, you know, whoever.
Brothers from Verona.
Exactly. Precisely. Yeah.
So I really enjoy Victoria, like Rodrigo, in retrospect. I think I still really enjoyed it on my second viewing.
Yeah.
But I think Victoria is a really big film nerd type of movie, or in movie, especially the discussion that's happening or have it online is very borderline somewhat pretentious. And people arguing, is it a one take film? Like, well, it's a one shot film. It's not a one take film. That was an argument in an entire article I read. I'm like, get out of it. Get off the internet. Just leave. You make us all worse people. That was an entire article. And so in reading the stories,
why I don't ever go to the internet.
Yeah. And reading the stories about how it was made, like, I wish there was they should have shot a documentary, like a behind the scenes camera that's all one take of the making of Victoria.
Yeah, that's what they could have done, is they could have slapped a GoPro.
So hard.
They could have strapped a GoPro helmet cam on the camera operator.
Like behind him.
Yeah, behind him, like a foot, so that you're just kind of seeing everything from
have like a
10 feet up.
Stick behind him.
Yeah. From like, it's just like a foot and a half up and back from the whole film that you're watching.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, there's on IMDb and around the internet, there's some interesting stuff where there's like, you know, there are times when you can like Victoria and Sonic get into the car on the same side and they close the door, but you hear a second door closing. That's, you know, the camera guy getting into the passenger seat and stuff like that. So it's already complicated enough. You can't have a third camera guy following the first camera guy.
Well, they said one of their friends, he has like that drug freak out in the middle of the street because they weren't blocking off all these streets. So some of the people in the background of the film are just people on the streets in Berlin walking through. Yeah. And sometimes they would like make sure like, hey, we're filming. They just walk through it normally. But the guy's having a drug freak out as an actor on the thing. And these two people started rushing up to try to help him out. And the director like runs over and stops them and like consoles them. Like, no, he's fine. We're shooting a film. So he's like directing the film and like making sure people are out of the way. And so it's just really like that part of it, the technical aspect of pulling it off and shooting it and color grading of it as well. You kind of get into that. It's really interesting.
It's 6:00 in the morning, and suddenly the police roll up and there's these loudspeakers going off in your neighborhood. Stay indoors.
Yeah.
I mean, if you hadn't gotten the notice that they were filming and doing this, you could be pretty freaked out about that. So yeah, I mean, technically very nice film.
So I think it's worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely.
Even if you aren't super film technical nerd, for just the experience of what that's like. Because I think Rodrigo might be right, where this could be something that really starts going now that we have these cameras that can record for super long periods of time. And doing like Duck Soup or just like weird stuff, like those weird like 20s and 30s comedies that are essentially like plays anyways, mm-hmm. back through now would be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed it. I hope you guys do too when you watch it. So that's it for this week. Next week, I don't know what film we'll be doing. There's a whole lot of stuff digitally, and I'm sure we'll comb through it and find the perfect film to discuss next week. But in the meantime, head over to majorspoilers.com. You can find articles discussing comic books and movies and news and all sorts to keep you entertained and podcast until next episode of Zach on Film. While you're there, click on the Amazon.com link where you can buy Victoria now on DVD and Blu-ray through Amazon. It's not going to cost you any extra to do that, but a little bit we'll come back to Major Spoilers when you make that purchase using that link, and that'll help keep the site rolling and podcasts coming out to you like every day of the week on your preferred podcast platform. That's it for this week's episode of Zach on Film. See you next week.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.